we've talked, you know, at length now about your commitment to finding information for your daughter. So my first question is that the narratives we receive as adoptive parents of Chinese children usually document similar stories of abandonment. For example, according to my own paperwork, my daughter was found in front of the health center in a city in southern China. The report documents what she was wearing and doesn't offer much more detail. This is not unusual. You've told me that you doubt these narratives are true. Can you give me one or two specific examples about how you've come to have these doubts?
In my opinion, finding locations that are very similar within a social welfare institute or even between different social welfare institutes within the same province or even between different provinces may not be believable. And the reason I feel that way is, in my opinion, a random abandonment in China should be random. And I would think each birth parent would come up with a unique idea about how to relinquish their child. When you see birth parents doing the same thing over and over again, or a bunch of them abandoning on one date, and then no abandonments happen for months afterwards, you have to suspect that it might not be true. I've been told that abandoning a child in China is a very taboo thing to do. So it's not like birth parents are going to be discussing it with their coworkers and their friends and their neighbors. You know, they're embarrassed by this. And so only their close inner circle, and sometimes maybe just the parents and the grandparents, you know, might know about this. So in my mind, there is no reason why repeated locations should be showing up or clustering of abandonments over a short period of time and no abandonments thereafter. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. To me, it's not random. And so if it's not random, I think it's important to try to figure out what's going on.
What do you think is going on?
You know, I'll refer to my daughter's abandonment statement. You have 9 out of 10 children abandoned in the summer of 2003. All of them are abandoned the following January and February of 2004. All but one are about 4 to 6 months of age at abandonment. And, you know, when you initially look at the abandonment locations, they might look different, but they are really not. They're all kind of, you know, nebulous general government-affiliated locations, either the Social Welfare Institute or town government or social activity buildings in one of 3 towns. And I have learned that the social activity building is within the township government building. So when you see a social activity building, it's not a different building. It's the same building as the township government building. And interesting, these places are really impossible to search. You know, you're relying on, you know, people with government jobs to give you information if you ask. And, you know, I'm very suspect of, you know, getting my information from government-related people. So, you know, and if they say, nope, we don't remember anything, you know, you're stuck. You have nowhere to go. And it just didn't make sense that all these mothers do the same thing in the summer. And then, you know, they all have the children in the summer, and then the following early winter or early in 2004, they all abandoned. And I actually know the area pretty well. I visited there, and it's very warm in the summer, and it can get very cold in the winter. And in 2008, they had really bad ice storms. And I found out our foster mother's house was severely damaged. And so, you know, why does a woman wait until the dead of winter to abandon a child? And then you find that 9 other supposed Chinese mothers did the same exact thing. You know, logically, it does not make sense. It just doesn't. So what do I think is going on is I don't think these children are being randomly abandoned.
Where does your mind lead you at that point? And you've done a lot of research. If they're not being randomly abandoned, what do you think is happening?
Well, I can only talk about my daughter's case. I actually had the finding aid in my possession from 2005 when I adopted until a Chinese friend accidentally saw my finding ad in 2008 and read it and was the first one to tell me, I don't believe any of this information. I never thought to get the other ads translated. You know, I had the ad in my position. Originally, when I adopted in 2005, I didn't know a single person that spoke Chinese or was bilingual in Chinese. And then over the years, I made a few acquaintances, and it was just like an accident. She happened to see it lying. We were talking about finding ads, and she didn't know what a finding ad was. I said, oh, here, I'll show you my daughters. And, oh, by the way, it was a group of 10, so there's 9 other, you know, girls published. And when I showed her the whole ad, you know, she took a long time reading it over and over again because there's only one sentence written about each child. So it should not have taken her that long to read. And I kind of knew something was up when she kept on reading them over and over again. And so when she told me what she did, I was a little shocked because up to that point, I didn't know anything. And then I asked her to translate all the ads because I wanted to see what she thought. And when she translated them into English, I knew exactly. I understood exactly, and I agreed with her. So that was 2008. And other things bothered me. The abandonments were clumped. I got Brian Stein's birth family search analysis, and in 2004, there were like 24 published finding ads. In 2005, I think there was another 10. In 2006, there were 0. Mm-hmm. And then in 2007, there were, I think, another around 10. You know, and that didn't make sense either. Why so many in 2004? And then why 0 2 years later? You know, it just didn't seem normal. It didn't seem random. Something was going on. So these finding ads really bothered me a lot. And I tried to go online on the Yahoo groups and get other parents to share their finding ad information, but nobody would share anything to me. They adoptive parents like guard their child's finding stories like it's top secret information, and you know nobody would share anything. And I'm like, I wanted to see the finding ads group before my daughters and the group after my daughters and to see if the same kind of thing was going on, but I couldn't get anywhere. And then in January of 2009, that's when Brian Stye started the birth family search analysis, where he would pull all the finding ads and look for any unusual trends. And I'm like, oh my God, here it is. This is what I've been looking for. I want to see what these other finding ads said. It might be the same weird trend. He was the one that actually first alerted me to me. You know, some years there were lots of published finding ads, and some years there were 0. But the other thing he caught on that was a post a Chinese man made on some sort of Chinese internet forum, and he was complaining that family planning officials had taken 3 children of his relatives. Now, he did not live in the area any longer. He lived in another province. But I guess he was asking for information. So Brian put a link to that post in my birth family search analysis. And I clicked on it. And again, this is back in 2005. And, you know, Google Translate wasn't good then. It's not that great now for Chinese, but it was horrible back then. You know, so I'm on some Chinese internet site. And I don't know how to search for it. I can't understand anything. So I showed it back to my Chinese friend, the one who was the one who alerted me to the weirdness of the finding ads a year previous. And I said, you know, first of all, this is what Brian Stye is alleging. Is it true? And she read the post and she said, yeah, that's exactly what this guy is alleging, that, you know, family planning officials took these 3 girls. They were a little younger than my daughter. I'm going to say maybe about 5 to 8 months younger than my daughter. And she said, oh, and by the way, he has I think she said he had an email address and a cell phone number in his post. Brian didn't mention anything like that. I didn't realize there was a way to contact this person. And, you know, then her next breath, she says, do you want me to contact him? And, like, I wasn't expecting any of this. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, she kind of caught me off guard. And so I said, yeah, sure, contact him. And so she contacted him, and it was interesting. I didn't find out till a few years later. I thought she contacted him, and that's how the dialogue started, but it didn't. they were very suspicious of her when they contacted her. Like at first they didn't answer her. Then they called her back, and when she said hello, they hung up a couple times on her. And she said it was very strange. And like finally, the third phone call, they talked. And I think she thinks that she was trying to scam them or something. She said they were very suspicious of her. And counties are very suspicious of strangers. I guess they were suspicious somebody was actually,
Well, I mean, she's called.
She provide information without trying to get money out of them. I think they were searching her phone number in the meantime to try to figure out if she was legit or not.
Well, she's calling from the U.S., right?
I think she would call through Skype. She was always told me she would call through Skype. It was very cheap because she used to make phone calls to the foster mother for me. Yeah, she said it cost like 1 cent a minute or something. So.
Well, Let me just stop you here, because one thing we haven't explained is who Brian Stye is. He is a person, an adoptive father of three Chinese daughters, who with his wife, who is Chinese from Guangzhou, does birth parent research for adoptive parents. And your friend's suspicions, the contact with this gentleman, have all led you to what conclusion about your own daughter?
Well, I believe the children were, I'm going to use the word coerced from their families. In some cases, it seems like the children were outright taken. In other cases, it seems like the parents faked an abandonment, which means they bring a child to the officials and they claim they found the child when, in fact, it's their own child. But they kind of knew what the political situation was going on, and I feel they felt they had no choice. They saw this going around with all their neighbors and friends. They can't leave their villages because of the hutao system. You know, they're stuck. And so you see all that's going on around you, you know, what do? Do you wait till family planning comes and causes havoc in your house? Or do you just make up a story? Or do you realize you have no choice and you just make up a story and claim you found a child and turned her in? Because there is evidence that some families did that as well.
So having reached that conclusion, you're now kind of confronted with a very difficult thought, which is that your child, whom you adopted, assuming one thing, because we've talked about this, and you went into this process like many of us, most of us, I'm sure, with one understanding of how the girls, mostly girls, some boys, become available for international adoption, and in the course of this research and just becoming aware of these patterns and abandonments and doing your own work, you've now come to this conclusion that your child may not have been legitimately abandoned. In fact, you strongly suspect that. And yet, you are her parent. How do you manage knowing or suspecting that she wasn't abandoned and, in fact, may have been confiscated, if your theory is correct? How do you manage those feelings? How do you feel about being her parent, having come to these conclusions?
I'm a realist, and I just accept it, you know. And I did not create this wrong. I was not the family planning official that it coerced these birth families into relinquishing their child, lying to them. You know, I was just, as I put it, the dumb, naive adoptive parent who believed what I was told back then. You know, I followed the rules, all the rules that the American government, the Chinese government, my adoption agency had, and I waited and waited, and I was never given an absolute guarantee that I would ever be able to adopt a child. So I did not create this mess. Nevertheless, I've been sucked into it. because I adopted a child, and years later learned that family planning was coercing birth parents to relinquish their child, and there's evidence that this started 1 year after the Social Welfare Institute got approval for international adoption. You know, the timing is very amazing. But I think the real question is what does one do after the fact, after you've adopted and you've learned about all this fraud? Do you keep it to yourself so you don't upset your immediate family or your child or people in your travel group or other adoptive families who adopted from the same social welfare institute, you know, or do you open up and publicize it, you know, risking disapproval from all those other people, but at least alerting pre-adoptive parents, you know, of the not-so-nice side of adoption from China. And for me, keeping quiet was never an option, because I felt if I kept quiet, I was no better than all those family planning officials that didn't play by the rules and took children, which is illegal for them to do in China. You know, if I kept quiet, I'm no better than them. So I've been, you know, very open about our story, despite the fact that I'm sure some of my family members prefer I not be. I've tried to take precautions to protect their privacy. You know, I'm out there on the internet. Most people will know who I am by my story, even though I'm using a pseudonym. But I do want to protect the others in my family. So I don't have any links to any of my family members on any social media groups. I have a different last name than my children, my husband, because I never changed my name when I got married. So hopefully, you know, although people know my story, they may not necessarily link it to my husband and my children, because that's up to them how they want to handle it.
How does your daughter is 12 now, is that right?
Yes.
Where is she in all this? What do you tell her about her origin story? And is she aware that your steps to protect and separate your work in this way from your family's names and identity, is she aware that you are out sharing this story? How does she feel about it?
She has no interest in China. She has no interest in finding her birth family, birth parents, or siblings. She's totally into her own life, you know, in the United States, with her school, her extracurricular activities, her friends, and she doesn't care at all. I do feel obliged to mention things to her as we go along, just because she's getting to the age where, you know, she could do an internet search, although I know she wouldn't because she has no interest. I'm concerned a friend of hers, you know, maybe a really precocious kid in school, you know, might do a search someday and say, wow, this is what I found about your child. Because if you do a Google search, there was a 2009 scandal about the family planning official seizing children in this town. You know, even to this day, we're, 7 years later, on the first page of Google Hits are all these links to the stories of what happened in 2009. It's very easy to find information about what this Chinese news scandal from 2009. So my concern is really one of her friends doing a Google search and giving her the information. Because she has no interest, so at this age, I'm fairly certain she wouldn't do it. So I've kind of, over the years, have hinted at what I think happened. And she says, Mom, I'm not interested. I don't care, you know. But I said, well, I think you should hear it. You know, someday you might hear it from one of your friends. I'd rather you hear it from me. So I just tell her that, I tell her I have her official information in this big file. And anytime she wants to look at it, she's welcome to look at it. And I'll explain it to her. And she says, I have no interest. And then I said, well, let me tell you, I have what the government, your official version of what things happened. And I just don't think it's true for a lot of reasons. And I have different independent sources of evidence, not just one. One of the big ones is her foster mother from day one told me she didn't believe the finding information. I said, you know, so I don't believe the official information is true, and I've learned some things over the years, and what I think happened was your parents were very, very poor, and, you know, China is a very different country than the United States. We have a lot of freedoms here that they don't necessarily have. You know, one year in school, I think maybe third or fourth grade, they were learning about freedom of speech and freedom of the press and freedom of religion, and when we were studying for the test, you know, I also added, you know, we have another freedom here, and that's to have as many children as we want. You know, and China has the one-child policy. So if you were a poor family and you accidentally had an extra child, you could get into a lot of trouble, and the officials could make things very difficult for your family. They could punish you. They could smash in your roofs. They could take all your, you know, your belongings and your farm equipment, because they were poor farmers and your farm animals. And then, like, nobody in the family could eat. Nobody had a way to make a living, you know, and they kind of pressured these families that they should, you know, give up their child. And they really weren't supposed to do that, but, you know, they don't have laws like we do in the United States. And these people were very poor. And I say, I don't think your family had a choice. You know, and I think they relinquished you, but, you know, I don't know if they did it willingly or not. I tend to think they didn't do it willingly. And that's kind of the story I tell her.
And so far her reaction is, thanks, but I really don't want to know about this.
Yeah, thanks, but no thanks. I want to go over to my friend's house.
So are you embarking or have you on an actual birth parent search?
Yes.
And you're doing that. Does she know you're doing that, your daughter?
Yes. Actually, as she's gotten older, she's actually been a bit more militant about not wanting any sort of interaction or contact with her birth family. I mean, at one time she said she would like to know if she had siblings. But then as she got older, she said she doesn't care. It was getting to the point that I thought, you know, maybe I should stop searching, you know, because she just said, Mom, I don't want to know. I don't want to care. I don't care at all, you know. And so I told her, I said, do you want me to stop? And her answer was, Mom, if you want to search for yourself, fine, go ahead. But don't do it for me. So I felt that at least gave me the green light to continue. And I would say at this point, I am searching for me and not for anybody else.
So what would happen if you had a DNA match and you found birth parents, given her ambivalence, what would you do? Let's say in 6 months that happened. What would you tell her? Would you wait? Have you thought that through?
Yeah, I think everything through. Well, you know, I feel a grave injustice had been done to them if she was truly forced from them. You know, and I turn the situation around and say, you know, if I was in their shoes, if my government had forced a child from me, you know, what would I want to happen? You know, for me, I would never forget about that child. I would think about that child every day until the day I died. And so I feel at least I don't know what they think, but if they were like me, they deserve closure. So they, at minimum, deserve to know where she's living and how she's doing. And, you know, what I'm hoping as my daughter matures and gets older, you know, her thinking will change. And I think her thinking will change. And at the time where she is open to making contact, we'll make contact, you know, but it might not be for a long time. But I feel they do have a right to know what happened to their daughter.
So I'm just going to challenge you a little bit. What if she's never open to it? What if she turns around and says, you inserted yourself into a decision that as the adoptee should have been mine. And I'm angry at you.
Well, I'm not forcing her to make contact with them.
I see.
It's up to you. But there's nothing that says that I can't make contact with them. I think it's two separate things. Me making contact with them and her making contact. I'm sure they would like her to make contact with them. And, you know, I will explain the difficult situation as much as I would like her to make contact with them. I can't force her. You know, as she gets older, there's very little I can force her to do. She's a very strong-minded 12-year-old. You know, but all I can say is I will encourage her the best I can. And I think a lot of this is immaturity at her age, but she is young, you know, but I'm hoping as she matures, her thinking will change. And I honestly think, you know, at the latest, by the time she's pregnant and has her first child, I think at that point she'll kind of, for the first time, be able to relate to her Chinese mother, and then her thinking may change. I think at this point she just totally does not relate to China, doesn't relate to a Chinese birth parents, birth siblings. You know, she sees herself as totally American and doesn't understand why people think she should want to have Asian friends or want to be interested in China. She just does not see herself as Chinese at all. So she doesn't relate to China at all. So I think if she could relate to being a mother, that might be, you know, I hopefully it'll be sooner than that. But if not, I think at that point, she will then be able to put herself into the situation her Chinese mother was. And, you know, maybe her feelings would change.
So is it fair to say then that, you know, there is a strongly held view in the general adoption community that the decisions about birth parent connection should reside exclusively with the adoptee. So is it fair to say that that's not a view that you share? I'm not talking about just her decision to connect, but even to, it sounds like what you believe is that you have, as the adoptive mother, in a set of circumstances that are particular to the Chinese adoption system, that you have as much right to try to have a connection with the birth parents as the adopted child. Is that fair to say?
I feel that way because I believe fraud was involved. And I feel responsibility, because the fraud is involved, to do something about it. If fraud was not involved, I don't think I'd be doing what I was doing.
Okay. So then, yeah.
And once again, and I've also talked to a lot of adult adoptees, and many of them say they have no problems with the adoptive parents gathering information. You know, the actual contact, that's a different story. But most of them said they wished their adoptive parents had gathered information, and then leave it up to the adoptee to make final contact or not. So that's what I said. I couldn't even pressure my daughter to make contact, even if I wanted to. She is a very strong-minded 12-year-old. She's like 12 going on 20. It's just going to have to come from within her. You know, I can encourage and suggest, but in the end, it's her decision. And as I said, because she was so militant against contact, I did go back to her and say to her, should I stop what I'm doing? I asked her that about a year ago. And she said, no, you can, Mom, if you want to do it, just know you're doing it for yourself, not me. So again, I feel she's given me the green light. But as I said, just because I make contact, that doesn't mean she'll make contact. And knowing what she's like now, she's probably not going to want to make contact for a while. She's not going to change next year, the following year. You know, she has to grow up a lot before she's going to get some curiosity. You know, I would think, you know, the earliest, late high school or college.
Okay. Is it fair to say that your husband is not on the same page with you about this kind of research that we've been discussing? And how do you reconcile that if that's the case?
Yes, that would be a good portrayal of my husband. I reconcile it as he's entitled to his opinions and I'm entitled to mine.
And that's working out? In other words, he's not
mad
that you discuss this on the internet? Is he okay so far as you don't, you know, you make these efforts to conceal your identity?
You know, I've told him, just like I've told some other adoptive parents from our social welfare institute, that I've been doing some research for a lot of time. I found a lot of information. You know, most of it isn't good. You know, are you interested in knowing about it? And they said no. And so I don't push it. So I treat him as the other parents from the social welfare institute. You know, I just tell him, but, you know, he doesn't stop me from doing this, and I'm sure there's things, you know. I think, you know, as I said, with the precautions of having a blank Facebook page, you know, I try not to link him or my children to me. And, you know, I'm sure some people probably know who we are, but, you know, if people in our town would know about it and it would get back to him, you know, he might not want to hear it. So that's why I do not, you know, link him or my children to me on any online forum that I am on.
I have one last question for you. If you met your daughter's birth parents, what would you say to them?
The first thing I would do is I would apologize for what happened to them. The second thing, I just can't imagine what a parent goes through who has gone through something like this. I myself just can't imagine if it would have happened to me, how it would go on living. I would have a very hard time going on living. And in fact, I found out one of the birth parents in her town who had a child confiscated did try to commit suicide and try to stab himself in the neck. And since then, what's quoted in the newspapers is it seems like he hasn't been quite right in the mind. He talks nonsense. And, you know, I can understand why he did something like that. He felt like a complete failure. He made several attempts to try to get his child back, and they said, tough luck, he's gone. So my heart really breaks for what these families have endured. So if I met them, you know, first of all, I would want to know the story, the real story. I would want to know, you know, if they had a vet message for my daughter, you know, what they would like to tell her. And I would tell them, I will make them aware. I will be in contact and make them aware of what she's doing in life. And I would also feel the need to help them out in some way. And, you know, obviously, you know, returning the child is not an option. But I would consider them family. And I told my daughter that I would consider them family, and she kind of looked at me like I was crazy. But, you know, and family helps family. So I would do whatever I could, whatever they asked. And I mean, it was something reasonable. If they asked me for $10,000, I'm not going to give them $10,000. But, you know, if they need help for school fees, or, I mean, it would just depend. And I would come up with something I thought was reasonable.
What if, I guess I have one more question, which your answer made me think about. You said returning your daughter is not reasonable. How old was your daughter when she came home?
20 months.
20 months, and she's now 12. She's lived her whole life with you. What if there were a situation in which a younger child, I realize this is a hypothetical, but since you've given this so much thought, I'm gonna ask you. What if a younger child were found to have been trafficked or in some way inappropriately placed for international adoption, and the Chinese parents did demand return of the child? What do you think should happen if that ever did happen? I realize it's very highly unlikely because everything about the system in China makes it really very difficult to impossible for biological parents to have any real standing in this situation. But, you know, the world is changing. We know much more than we did. There's far more connection going on back and forth because of the internet, social media. So I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it is a difficult situation, and I would never tell another doctor what to do in that situation. And I know that kind of situation has occurred in China already. I know, I guess, secondhand of an incident that happened years ago with an internationally adopted child. And then there was, I think, one recently in the news in China. Domestic adoption, but it wasn't a legal domestic adoption.
I read about that. The child was purchased.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the adoptive family gave the child back, and I think the child had been with them for a while.
This was this was two Chinese families within. This was within China, not an international adoption.
Yeah, but
story.
I also know one, Jane Leike of our Chinese Daughters Foundation, in a talk she gave, there was a. Long time. I'd never seen the case written up in the news or anything, but she mentioned a case of a child adopted by a European family. This was years and years ago. And I don't know what happened, but somehow they found out he was stolen from his family, and they traced. I think he had been with the European family for a while, too. So, you know, you got different language, different culture. It's tough, but, you know, I can only speak of my incidents. In my instance, I feel I have a legal responsibility to raise my child, and I have a moral responsibility to raise her and do what's best for her. So I take those responsibilities very seriously. So if I don't think something is in her best interest, I'm not going to go along with it. You know, I also have my husband to think of. And while he may not agree with what I'm doing in terms of searching, it's his child too. And I respect his rights too. So if there was something I wanted to do with our child that he did not want me to do with our child, you know, I would defer to him. It's his child, too. I don't have unilateral control. I'm not a single mother. So just like I wouldn't want him to do something with our daughter that I, you know, completely disagreed with. So there's a lot of factors. My daughter is of an age where, as I say, it's very difficult to make her do anything. So, that's out of the question. But say even if she had a great interest and wanted to go back to China, you know, I don't think it's in her best interest. So I wouldn't do that. You know, I'm not going to send her back to China. And I had reporters ask me that question back in 2009, several times over. Would you give the kid back? You know, so. But what I would do, if she showed interest, I would encourage a relationship between her and her Chinese family. And while we can't make up for the past, we can start a relationship today, and we have the future. And visit China as much as we possibly could, you know, given the expense and her vacation schedule from school. And then when she's 18 and she's an adult, you know, it's her decision. And I don't think it's necessarily an either-or or black and white. I think there's a middle ground. And I think the adoptee can have two families. And that's what I would encourage. I would encourage her to love and cherish both families.
Well, I want to thank you very much for a very, very compelling talk and for being really open about your own experiences and all the thinking you've done about a really tough part of the Chinese adoption story.
Thank you very much for interviewing me. I appreciate it.